So, welcome everyone. I think it's time to start. And welcome and thanks for all to show up here. I want to talk about Ezinga today and maybe why you want to favorite instead of Nagios or consider choosing Ezinga, migrating to it, whatever. First of all, who am I? I'm a consultant working for a German company called Netways. We're one of the driving forces behind Ezinga, and I joined the Ezinga team back in 2012. And my main kind of motivation there is to bring a bit of organization into Ezinga too, how everything works, how to plan, what features we would do in terms of our project. And on my private side, I'm also a packager for Debian. I'm the one who brought Ezinga 2 to Debian and Ubuntu. With help from a few others. And yeah, find me on Twitter as well. So, first of all, who is using Ezinga 1 at the moment, if any? Okay, quite a few. Ezinga 2? Rafael, I know. It won't be a too deep intro into what do you do with Ezinga, but quite a brief overview. So our target as a I think that's called DevOps, right? Okay. The target of our efforts is to bring something we call an open source enterprise monitoring solution. That means it should be scalable, it should work in very big environments, it should make it easy for you to use it there, but it should be as easy as to use for a small home user. I myself have like two servers, one at home, which is like a file server. Server at a German data center, just to play around with stuff, a few web apps, WordPress, and so on. And it fits for me just quite as well as it would fit for a big enterprise company. And that's what we want to do with our focus. There are a lot of people involved in Ezinga. A few are doing packaging stuff for Red Hat, EPL, even FreeBSD. Not my kind, but if you want to use it. But we are always looking for new people to get involved. And even if you just want to contribute, you find something in a documentation that doesn't fit you or don't understand, you might could write it better, send us a pull request. You're welcome. And where we started actually was way back in 2009, when Nagios development was a bit frozen. And it still is kind of. And we wanted to make it better. So the idea came up to fork it, to make ourself kind of the developers of Ezinga. And a few guys did. And I think our main focus back there was to fix bugs, to make small adjustments just to improve the overall behavior of Nagios back then. And we came a long way since, and I think in 2012 we started working on Ezinga 2. And until the first week, what we consider stable version, it took us almost 2 years. But I think it's quite interesting where we are. And of course, we not only want to provide you with a nice code that checks things, but also a web interface where you can see what is your environment doing, is your server working. So, in our team, we have some approach for two-track development currently. We still have the old Ezinga stuff, which is basically Ezinga 1. The web interface of the so-called classic UI with us, and the Ezinga Web 1 interface, which we use mainly on bigger installations. Gets quite a bit complicated. On the other side, we have Ezinga 2. And Ezinga Web 2. Both of them are still supported, And I think Ithinca 1 will be supported for a few years to come, but maybe you'd like Ithinca 2 better. So, maybe a few of you never had to touch on something like Nagios or so. So, what do you want to achieve with Ithinca monitoring? We want to monitor everything, basically. We want to monitor if hardware is working, if a web service is working, if SQL database does what it should. And we want to do that in a regular interval. So like every minute, does it work? Does it work? Does it work? And the idea is to prefer active checks in any way. Active checks means the Ithinca core runs a command that reaches out to the target system, verifies that it's working, and tells Ithinca, yeah, you're fine. So we are gathering all the status and saving it for you, including collecting some performance data, which is like CPU load, disk usage, whatever you would, might have. We want to notify people on every channel you would like to know. Maybe a mail, maybe SMS, maybe a Jabber message of some kind. We want to provide a way to set dependencies, so Ithinca knows, okay, that's a server in that data center, and if the router there is down because it's not responding anymore, maybe the whole data center is down. And maybe I only want to get notified for that one router that's broken and not every 3,000 hosts there. So that should be as easy as possible. Yeah. And in addition, we want to support add-ons. So all the data we know, like stuff that changes, performance, data of any kind, we want to pass to add-ons for them to save it. And we got a view, a lot of integrations nowadays. We can forward to Logstash, Greylog. We can send metrics to Graphite, OpenTSDB, and InfluxDB, or whatever supports like a Graphite interface to send metrics. And we want to extend that support in the future. So every tool that makes sense to integrate, just let's do it. Like if the Logstash approach with like 1,000 inputs and 3,000 outputs, but let's see where it goes. So where are we at with Ithinca 2 at the moment? We are at version 2.3.8, which is like the third major version and the eighth bug fix version of that currently. It was just released in July. And we're even working on 2.3.9 at the moment. Some smaller bugs, some Windows stuff. And the main feature of Ithinca 2 is it has been completely rewritten from scratch. Now our efforts to make Nagios better, we decided maybe it would be better to avoid trademark issues or trademark questions in the future. And of course, improve the quality of the overall code. So it's now C++ and some Boost. We could have written it in Ruby or Java, but well, C++ is quite cool. What we wanted to keep from Nagios is this, the ideas behind it, because they're pretty good, easy. And in addition, we want to enable users to use Ithinca 2 in their environment. So there's a Puppet module, there are Chef receipts, there are Ansible playbooks for set up Ithinca 2. Some of them are managed by members of the Ithinca team. A few of them, like I think Ansible and Chef, are made by guys that just are interested in it, but still can contribute the code to our Git repository. And of course, packages and Vagrant boxes are available, so everyone can just start setting up without worrying about compiling a binary or extensive library like Boost is. Hello, computer. Okay. Before we say what is better in Ithinca, what is good about Nagios? As I said, monitoring is easy. You just have to install it, configure a few hosts, configure a few services, and you have a basic monitoring setup. The stack is so simple, you just need to install Nagios, no big dependencies, a simple web interface, and you're done with your basic setup and all. Everything you need to do is now describe to Isinga how does your environment looks, what should be monitored. And we wanted to keep that. Those active checks, I said before, are really powerful because it avoids dependencies. Many monitoring solutions rely on some component somewhere to send the central monitoring system status. We want to avoid that wherever possible and want to give you the way to do it centrally or ask the system centrally. Nagios has a pretty huge community, especially in the USA, still today. So if you search for Nagios problems or questions, you might get a lot of answers out there. And of course, all the plugins that exist on the internet for basically a lot of vendor stuff, a lot of basic default standard plugins, they are just easy usable. It's just a bash script, few lines, some check output and a return code. That's all we need. So, but why go to Isinga? I thought a lot about including that slide here because I want to avoid to bash on Nagios. So that's the only bashy-like term, but it gives you an idea about what the focus of Nagios is at the moment. That's the download area on Nagios.org, so their open source website. And it tells you pretty much because Nagios is an open core project, meaning you have a Nagios core that's pretty nice and working, but all the other stuff they want to do around it, you have to pay for it. Or it's at least they want you to pay for it. And you notice maybe that small PayPal buy now button for a student VM. You can get our vagrant boxes for free at any time. So let's start talking about Isinga. Our main goal is, and even as a company of NetWays behind that, we want to be 100% open source, 100% free software. That's really important for us to support a community. And I think that's quite well received, at least I hope. So we welcome contributors. We have an active community support. A lot of people, even not directly from the Isinga project, are talking to users that have questions. And there are a lot of channels just shown on the website. So another problem with Nagios, and that's maybe something you wouldn't really see in your home environment or a small company, is scaling. I started like 3 years ago and hadn't really a big idea about what Nagios is inside. And if you start reading the code and understanding it, there were big mistakes made in the very beginning. And if you had a very, really big setup, you would notice that quite early because there's only a single loop doing jobs. So it's like a scheduler that's just running a while loop and executing checks, doing notifications, doing status updates. And that costs a lot of CPU time, especially because it only runs in one CPU core at a time. And that has been there for a lot of time. It works pretty good. But there is a limitation level you might reach at some point. And what I personally noticed, if you have an AMD processor, which like the Opta runs with about 24 cores or more, each core grows smaller. And since it can utilize only one CPU core, it gets slower and slower the more CPU cores you have. So large installations are pretty difficult with that. Even like 10,000 services you might have at a mid-sized company can give you pretty trouble. And of course, the external interfaces we're talking here about have pretty nasty problems you wouldn't see in a small environment. So our goal was to go multi-threaded from the start, be able to load, to do a lot of stuff in parallel, to avoid cluttering, to avoid blogging in any kind. And we wanted to be able to distribute load about a cluster just automatically. And in our tests, we run like 1 million checks in 1 second intervals. Of course, I had a benchmark slide in here, and it's a pretty, how should I say, nice statistic, but there is actually no limitation in a single to how many checks it runs. The limitation is how many checks can be handled by the server. If you have some check that runs an extensive PHP library or Java or whatever, you wouldn't, of course, be able to run thousands of checks every second. But if it's just a simple shell script, like a SNMP notification or whatever, it can be done. And who of you used live status in the past? Or knows what it does? Basically, module scenarios were pretty nasty. So there wasn't really a real library to link against. You would have to take a few header files, compile a module against it, and yeah, it works. You can do events with it, you can access data with it, but it's not a real good solution to access data, because it can get really, really slow if you do a lot of queries. And it's very complicated to install. So our goal was to go modular. And these names are all modules inside Asynga 2 at the moment. There are a few smaller ones as well. But our idea is to have modules that do their stuff, can access internal information of the cluster, can talk to each other, exchange status data of any kind, and just the module resides on doing what it should do. So we have a module that checks stuff, runs checks, how you configure it. We have a module that cares about notifications. If the check results changes, we will send you notifications in that module. We have compatibility outputs for all the interfaces. We have a live status module that goes brings you the same interface the old live status integration brought you, but just here inside the core. We can write out perf data, we have cluster connections, and we can write to those various external tools. And these modules are pretty easy. And if you wanna maybe send events not to a Guelph output, but to a commercial tool of any kind, you can take that module, change it, send HTTP stuff somewhere, and you're done. And what we are currently working at is the new API that should be done till November and will be included in Asynga 2.4. That brings a lot of additional interactivity with the core. So, and all the modules, we want to give you a way to enable them just easily and just configure it. So we ship that modules. Only a few are enabled per default. And if you want to use live status, enable it, restart Asynga 2, and you're done. And if you use IDO for status output or database, the only thing you might have to change is to go to the config file and change the database password or change the host name where the database resides or whatever. So if we look at a shell for a moment, all you have here is a lot of configuration files. And if you configured Apache on Debian-based system, Debian or Ubuntu in the past, that's pretty similar to what we did here. We ship a bunch of default configuration files in that available for directory. And only thing it does is to set a symlink here. So if I do Asynga 2 feature enable live status, only thing it does is to set that link. You could have a look on the config file. Everything it does is to instantiate a module called live status. If you would like so, you can add a parameter where the Unix socket for live status should be, and it will be there after restart. That's the Raygun box, yes. So there we have a live status socket. And that's there we want to go. Make it easy for user, provide all the stuff, support as much as makes sense, and just allow you to use it. And not compiling weird modules from someplace. Of course, there were packages in the past, but actually we at Isinga 1 had pretty much problems with those modules in the past, because every time we try to change internal lists in Isinga 1, just for adding a new field, because we want to provide a new field for starters, we had problems with that modules because they were breaking. And now we have a simple module that provides live status that can do all the queries. And if we change it, we just have to add one or two lines to live status, and that's all we need to have a user support for it. So let's talk about clustering. I'm not sure how many of you have ever tried to make Nagios highly available. I see nodding. I know that face. Nagios was never intended to be highly available. So you have that one core that writes status, does stuff pretty good. But when you try to make it even like a cold standby system, or just have a second system that can take over the work when the other system is down, it's pretty hard. So you would have to build a lot of tools around it, and not just pacemaker, but really files to transport config files, to transport status data, which gets updated every like 10 seconds or so. And that's pretty hard. And I did it in the past a lot for customers, but it is not really fun. So we thought about how can we make it better, and not only how highly available, but scaling horizontal and vertical. So be able to have a DMZ checker, to have a Isinga 2 system at another location, at another country, continent, whatever. So that's what we have. We can split the configuration so it knows, okay, that's checked central, that's checked somewhere else. And that enables scaling to avoid all the latency you have to go through to execute checks. You just run them on site and transport the status to the central system. And if you go horizontal, you can set like two or three hosts on your central system. They are high available, and they distribute checks. So if you have two hosts, every host does 50%. If you have more, it gets split on the amount of nodes. And Isinga 2, we call it master satellite and agent. What it is basically Isinga 2 everywhere, but your configuration differs. So you have a centralized instance that does local checking. You can have another one besides it. You have a remote Isinga somewhere else that does network checks for the whole location. And you can install Isinga 2 on every single host. But the Isinga 2 on every single host would just act as an agent, connecting to the central cluster and allowing the cluster to tell them, please run that check and give me the result. Yes?
What about config files? Are the config files are central, or are they automatically distributed, or should you distribute it manually?
Yes. There are multiple ways to do it. You can do them decentral. You can put your configs everywhere. There is a tool inside the whole cluster stuff that is called repository, that makes the central Ezinga 2 instance available to talk to all the stuff, to all the systems, collect their configuration, and provide the central instance with the knowledge where is what, and what object should I know for my state. But what we always recommend, that's the config tile about here, you can put your configuration on a central instance, and the internal API can replicate that configuration. So you have like, if you have this system with two masters, the configuration is done on this system. And when you change stuff here, reload Ezinga 2 here, this will tell this system the new connection is here. They will compare their configuration state on file. And if he hasn't had the change yet, he will just copy the file, reload itself, and have the new configuration. And that goes down to the agent. And we try to keep it as simple as possible, so it's all files, all just configuration on disk, and it's just replicated. And that makes it pretty easy if you experiment with it a bit. So, another problem we always seen in the Nagios sphere of stuff, the security is pretty hard. So, you had an API in the back, which allowed you to run, execute plugins on a remote host of any kind, and that is not secure. It's a problem, shell injections are possible, it's only security based on an IP address whitelist. The encryption and API is pretty much not existing. It's more like a scrambling of communication with a compiled-in private key. And NSCA is basically the same way. But NSCA is stuff that sends a check result to the central instance. So, of course, you could do checks via SSH or whatever, but that makes other problems. So, the Ezinga 2 clustering forces you to use TLS. And TLS means for us not a scrambled connection with some pretty private key, but certificates. I know it's really hard with OpenSSL to do certification stuff, to create something like a CA, create certificates. It's not easy. That's why we provide you CLI commands to do it. So if you have that central Ezinga server, just create a CA there, create certificates. You have to bring only CA certificate and the host certificate to the target system, and that's all you need to know. Or if you have something like Puppet that already has a CA infrastructure in place, just reuse their certificates, works.
How do you generate those certificates, like
PRs after all? No. Ezinga 2, the daemon itself is also CLI 2. And it does all the stuff for you internally.
Okay, so I'm just going to say I got a new node. Please provide me a new certificate.
Basically, yes. So Ezinga 2 has that, scroll up a bit, PKI sub command, which can create a CA, create a cert, create a certificate, sign a certificate request. And if you use the, there's something called a node wizard, which is basically a command line tool to set up a new node. There's also a way to connect to the central server, request a certificate from there, and you're done. That's what the last point is, ticket. A ticket in our world is basically a password that helps to authenticate you to connect a new client. So enter that password. That password is configured in the central instance. You see, okay, that is valid for me. Here's your certificate. Hello? My PowerPoint doesn't like me anymore. Oh, sorry, LibreOffice, sorry. Sorry. Okay. Never seen Impress crash before, that was first. So, I want to show off a few configuration stuff we can do. If you don't get what the configuration does here, I will upload the slides afterwards. And there are a lot of examples and documentations. But I wanted to show you how I do configuration usually, how it might help you. So, gets back to Nagios first. It was called before configuration tricks. So it allowed you to assign an SSH tag to a wild list of hostnames. It allowed you to make host groups, maybe assign checks to that host group. But it was a lot of work, and there was a lot of intransparency how it actually works. And I know a lot of people that never understood it. So we brought logic. And let's just say we want to have a service, SSH, that runs a SSH check. And we want to apply that service to every host that is a Linux system, because the host has attribute OS, that's Linux, and where is an address configured, but not on hosts that are test systems, maybe. So, and that goes further and further. So you can do matching on host names, even array lists of host groups. You can do your own role definitions. You can filter on other attributes that describe your environment. And only Singer 2 will care about, okay, I have a new host. Let's see what host group it might have. So we have a lot of configure parsing in back, of course. But it's easy for you to configure it. So let's just imagine a host. And sorry about the domain, I couldn't resist myself. Let's say we have a host somewhere in the internet that's doing stuff for your company. And it has an IP address. And we want to describe it. So it's a production system. It's a web server. It's in a data center we call Nuremberg One, for example. The application is Bratwurst Shop. Amazing. And who is responsible for it? Application support. So, and you can even do your do it easier for you. Generate templates that describe your hosts. So have a something like a web server default that just sets production web server. Do all the host-specific stuff in the host. And just include the template on the host. And now let's add services. How about monitor HTTP, HTTPS on every node that is a web server? Or whatever fits your company. So, that's all you need to do, to monitor. How about notifications? Let's say we want to be notified out of work hours if a production system goes wrong. So we said we want to apply a notification. That's the name of the notification to all hosts. The host must match that definition. So only all production systems. You want to be notified by mail. That's configured in the template here. We want to send a notification to all users that are in data center on call and want to be notified only on out of work hours. And if you configured notifications before, You had to adjust a lot of contact groups on single Nagios objects. That's the only object you need in the whole configuration. Everything else is done just on resolving the configuration for you. So, and the same goes for services. Let's say we had that Bratwurst shop before, and now we want to be notified or notify the application support team when it goes wrong. Again, only production, only after work hours. And now we want to send the mail to app support on call. Behind that, user groups are users. The user might have an email, pager number, Jabber address, whatever, Trima, secure ID, no idea. But the user is only there for be defined as a user, to describe as a user, and the information is used here when defining notifications. Yes. If you have a shell script that can do it. That's nothing we really care about, because we give you the means to notify. In back is run some kind of command. If it's a send SMS via the local install GSM modem, or a mail is sent to the local mail server and forwarded to three other mails, we don't care about. You just need to write a shell script, give him the parameters, and done. And every magic you want to do is in your script. So, dependencies should be easy and would never wear with Nagios. So, again, if you have a location, number one, data center somewhere, I want to define that every host that matches my rule up down here gets a dependency. So the host targeted by that query has router as a parent. And if that router goes down, it's not available for us. That means that all dependent hosts are no longer checked, because, well, we can't check it. And we want to get notified for every dependent host. So in theoretical, you should only get a notification that that host is broken. But of course, tune it like you want. So what is not really easy to explain here, how we run commands. I've seen a lot of users not understanding what we're doing. We wanted to provide you an interface to describe how a script, check, notification, whatever, can be executed, what arguments it supports, and give you a simple way to set this argument. So that's, for example, some pretty vendor check you might have in your environment. It supports a lot of arguments, maybe like a host name, SNMP community, a mode, what the check should check on the server, a warning, and a critical limit. So you tell Asynga 2, where is the script? What arguments does it have? And maybe default values for those arguments. So you can overwrite them later. And only thing you need to do, if you define a service like a fancy vendor test, tell Asynga 2 which check command it is, and add vars attributes. And every attribute that check command is knows about or tries to find gets reused. So I can override that public community you've seen before. I can set the mode switch, the warning switch, whatever. And the magic behind it, all that stuff is shell escaped. So it's not possible to inject every bash quoting whatever command you might think about, because we will have an interface that tells him exactly which arguments there are, so we can make a proper arguments chain. And of course, if your script is vulnerable to an SQL injection of any sort, we can't fix that. Sorry, again?
Why do you put in vendor warning files?
Sorry, that's error. It should be critical. Yes?
You're talking about shell scripts. It also supports Python or
any executable on a Linux system, or basically any executable on Windows or whatever systems you're on. It only relies on the so-called Nagios plugin API, which is run a script, it echoes some stuff, and it has an exit code. Same as the old Nagios. Yes. 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 They're exactly the same plugin API, but a safe way to use them without writing a fancy command line. And if you want examples for check commands or don't want to write your own, there's a template library called the ITL, which we ship in our packages, that provides most of the it's a bit small form up here. Yes. So the ITL provides a lot of default check commands for all the default Nagios plugins, for public or popular stuff like the MySQL health checks from console or whatever. So there's a lot of in there. There's also contributions from commonly used checks. And so we have all in there you would need for basic setup, and you just have to define the services, set the vars, and it runs. Where to find the ITL library? If you have a system, it's here. It's installed by the package. It is not meant to be changed by you. That's why it's in user share. So if you want to improve a command, change it for you, either copy it, rename it, or import it as a template and change stuff to it. And inside the commands plugins, there's for the Manubulon SNMP plugins, some Windows plugins, NSClient++ checks, everything is in there. And Isinga 2 includes this file, ITL, in its main configuration file. You can also disable it if you don't want to use it. So, one more thing. I'm a bit behind my schedule. Isinga 2 is enhanceable, and that's something we included in 2.3, which is like we've gone a bit further with the configuration stuff. So, you can use functions in there. Define your own functions. And it's a pretty heavy for a starter, but just to show an example. Instead of assigning a fixed number, like a load of 2 or so, to that var, we give it a function. We define it a function for that. That's what the double brackets do. You could also write function brackets, like in other languages. And that in here is something like a script code in the configuration language. What it does is, every time that check is run, the function gets evaluated. Every time. And so you can do stuff like, are we in a time period 9 to 5? Then use 40. If we're outside, use 60.
So
Remote is easy on one server. Combining multiple servers is hard. The idea is to have to set the parameters centralized. But if you have the knowledge how many CPU cores that node has, how many CPUs they're in, you could set that as a host parameter. Maybe from a puppet fact or any other intelligence you have at your company, and then set the load here to say, okay, that limit multiplied by the CPU cores.
Okay, so no immediate way to, let's say, basically do some calculation, for example, for a cluster. It should be done by setting some additional variables that
Okay. Question was to check stuff in a cluster.
Just as an example where you can have like multiple nodes and you want to have some warning if you know, number of requests is involved
yes.
for the whole
yes.
cluster instead of each node.
Yes. You can do that stuff. You can connect multiple status informations inside Isinga 2. I think there was an example in our blog a few months ago, but it still resides on running multiple checks on multiple endpoints and have an additional check that does the combination. But you can do a lot of internal stuff in there. You don't even have to run a check command. You can calculate the result inside that configuration language by comparing stuff from multiple nodes and display a shared result. But that's too complicated for that presentation. But there is a lot possible.
Yes. I think what you mean is like something like API.
Yes. Yes.
For the whole
yeah. You could do that stuff internally. And I seen you can do business process inside an Isinga tool, but it's a bit more complicated to explain now. I'll see to get the link for you, and if you get me your email later. So, last point in my presentation is web interfaces. I said Nagios is open core, and I think that's they reworked it a bit for Nagios 4. But that's basically the web interface you all know from the past. And it's still there. It runs pretty good. We tried to improve it a lot with Isinga 1. That's why we called it the classic UI. Did a bit of multi-selection, multi-command features, make it prettier. But it still had a lot of limitations. And even if you have ever experienced Isinga Web 1, I had pretty much fun to make Debian packages for it, but it worked, yeah. It's pretty complicated. It's a lot of setup, it's JavaScript heavy, it's a configuration nightmare. We wanted to make it better. So, and one of the biggest drawbacks we ever had is to make it easy for users to use them. So the classic UI, it was just there, it worked there, but it was pretty hard to get a user to a modern web interface. So we thought about Isinga Web 2. And it's a new framework. It's responsive, meaning it should work everywhere. And it's made like setting up in a few minutes. Only drawback for you, it requires a database. And it's quite hard to explain, especially for small users, why they need a database, why they need to bother with MySQL, Postgres for their 2-3 server setup. Nagios had that magic status dot to transport status information out of the core. And the web interface always read it, displayed your information, but it's pretty ineffective at some point. And the main drawback was always history. So if you have a small setup at home and you wanted to say, okay, but what did my system 3 days ago? Nagios would have to parse a text log file for that time, and depending on how big it is, it would get slow. So we recommend you to please use the database. It's really easy, it can be set up within minutes, and give it a try. So, Isinga Web 2 actually is modular. We spend a lot of time on the base framework, and that's why it's still in release candidate, and we're still working on it and fixing bugs. We wanted to provide you a framework to do your stuff in it. And it's not restricted on monitoring information. So the monitoring stuff here is even a module. There are other modules to come we're working on and try to release over the next months, like business process, graphite integration, PNP integration, Logstash, And even our own documentation runs inside Ezinga Web 2. So if you read the Ezinga 2 documentation, it is actually running in Ezinga Web 2 for you. The only difference with the online version, it not authentication is disabled. That's a big difference. So, without explaining anymore, let's have a look on it. Let's make it a bit better. So, the main idea is to give you a quick overview about the situation. Bless you. So let's say you open Ezinga Web 2, you have logged in, used your magic password against some LDAP server or whatever you might want to use, and you see what's happening. What are the service problems? There is a host that is critical for like 3 minutes, 40 seconds, 41 seconds, 42 seconds. You have an overview about services that have recovered in the past. So, I think Wi-Fi is stable since 14.07. That's great. That's all the information. If you want to know exactly what is behind it, okay, click on it. Have the information. Go down. You see, 3 notifications have been sent for this issue. The last one, 1 minute, 47 seconds ago. Who is responsible? Contact. Oops. What check command is behind it? Where has the check been executed? So our main approach is to give you overview as fast as possible without a tricky web interface, without some old configuration, and just give you an image about what's happening and make it easy for you to do stuff. So if you want to reschedule a check or check it now, just click a button. And not two with a fancy form and a date input and whatever. So you wanted to make it easy to just have a few clicks to go so your web interface, have an overview. Let's have a look at the disk stuff. Yeah, my home directory is a bit full. Maybe have a visualization for all the performance stuff that is collected. 67 notifications have been sent for that issue. And also give you a way to view the history of a check. Pretty easy. Just click on history. And I noticed there's a bug with the sorting in here, so don't worry. You will have a historical overview about status have changed, notifications have been sent, downtimes have been set, acknowledgements have been set. In one view, easy, just from the database. So, yes?
Is it possible to display the command line of the check?
That's still to come. Okay. Displaying the command line in the web interface is not that easy. We included that in the classic UI with Ezinga, which is basically a cheap-made command line parser. What we want to do in the future is to connect Ezinga Web to the new API directly. So you can ask Ezinga 2 what has the last command line been. Reason for that is also security. We can filter out VARs that are named SNMP community that have password in its name. So a user of the web interface won't see your password of your application. But if you just have the command line somewhere here, it won't be secure. And that's what we're trying to do in the future. It is possible via internal commands currently for debugging reasons. And it would be, you can see it over the API later because it's the last status result also shows the last executed command line. That's to come, but not yet done. And what I want to give you on the way is just experiment with it a bit. Have a look at Fuse we integrated here. We play around a bit with Fuse that gives you insight about when events happened a lot, reporting stuff. Just play around with it a bit. And it should give you a lot of overview. Where was that? Yes. What I like pretty neat is that service grid Tom made a way ago. It shows you where, on which host, services are in error state on a grid. So you can see what is happening or what's problematic currently. So, and I said it's responsive. That's my smartphone. Just give it web access or VPN or HTTPS from somewhere, and you will have the same status on there. The same action, the same URL, one click, check, acknowledge, it just should work. So, inclusion ad, where to start if you want to try it? Read our docs. There's an introduction guide, how to install it, where to start. There's a big chapter about migrating from Ezinga or Meraggios. That's the biggest drawback you might have, rewriting your configuration. But I promise you, you would like it. And again, Vagrant VMs, if you just want to start up a VM, have a CentOS with Ezinga 2 running inside a bit demo configuration I had here on my system. It's just set up within a few minutes. Packages for the most of the common operating systems or distributions, not to say. There's even a Windows agent installation as a setup install. We recommend it only for agent use, but it would run like a Ezinga 2 daemon. And play around with Ezinga 2, Ezinga Web 2. And we would be happy to have you among our users. And there are big names on it. And most of them are still using Ezinga 1. But we are running projects with a lot of customers at the moment. We're knowing a lot of users that want to go to Ezinga 2, big users. And we're glad that our software is maybe we're doing the right thing at some point. So if you are from the US or going to the US, we have a Ezinga camp in Portland, just over the PuppetConf. And we plan to make a camp happen in Berlin next year. It's still, but details are still open, but I think it's March 1st. So happy to see you there, and thank you.